Chapter 1. Toasting Chestnuts and Children. Scarlet leaves flutter in the autumn breeze and carry with them the sweet notes of burning maplewood. Milky smoke rises from cottages speckling alpine ridges while farmers haul oats into weather-worn barns. Along Glacian's main road, women carry wicker baskets of sausages and brie. Families construct stalls and populate tables with the results of their summer labor. Two children, Abigail and Hugo, scarcely 11 and 7 years old, race down the bustling road intent on not burning alive. The sister and brother leap over muddy puddles and swerve around horse droppings.
"Hey, watch it!"
a baker yells as Hugo accidentally careens into him. Stumbling back into his stride, Hugo mutters a quick apology and bolts after his sister. The crisp air cuts at their lungs. Abigail clamps her arms over bulging, heavy pockets and runs in an awkward teeter past hay-filled carriages.
"Hugo, hurry!"
Abigail shouts over her shoulder as a smaller child pants and straggles further behind. Her eyes widen at the tangled mess of red hair bobbing and beeline towards them through the parting crowd. She slows her retreat just long enough to grab her brother's hand, pulling him into a sprint.
"Is she gonna eat us?"
Hugo sniffles.
"With apple glaze if you don't hurry," Abigail says.
The people of Glassalon shuffle out of the way of Elena, whose mane of fiery red tangles glint like sunlit copper as she strolls past, humming. With a lazy swish of her hand, she directs a horse-drawn carriage to divert from her path. A farmhand sighs and whips his horse forward. With dark bags under her eyes, she blinks blearily under the afternoon sun and scratches at her broad jawline. Seeing the two children dart between stalls, Elena follows, her stride covering two of theirs. She passes a merchant of roasting chestnuts, snatches a handful, and wolfs down a few of the scorching nuts. The merchant darts back as the flames rear up from under the pan, yearning for her caress. He frowns at his scorched sleeves and mumbles,
"Good day, mi gottis."
"Mm-hmm,"
she replies, absently discarding the remaining chestnuts onto the road. She passes through a throng of men idling in front of the bakery. A barrel-chested man leans towards her and asks seductively,
"The silo tonight?"
Behind him, his handsome 20-something-year-old son gives Elena a wink. She winks back at the son and says to the father,
"It seems I already have plans, my dear."
The men scatter from Elena's path. Meanwhile, Hugo follows his sister and ducks behind a stall, leaving only his feet visible behind it. She smirks and rolls up her chiffon sleeves. She approaches the stall, and a brewer by the name of Gregory glances up and snatches ornate glass bottles from the front of his display and replaces them with dusty ceramic ones. Elena strolls forward and places her hands on the still wobbling dirty bottles. The brewer's throat bobs, and he bends his knee into a bow.
"A happy full day to you, my blessed goddess. How may I be a service?"
Abigail shies away as the yellowing lace of Elena's hem brushing against the stall inches from her face. Hugo whimpers and Abigail punches him in the shoulder.
"Stop it,"
she whispers, panicking, edging into her tone. He puts his fingers in his mouth and continues to whimper, but quieter.
"Oh, Greg, you know how parched I become on my walks," the goddess says.
The brewer forces a smile.
"And I have a beautiful honey mead for you."
When she cocks an eyebrow, Gregory quickly adds,
"My apologies. I have bottles of beautiful honey mead for you. In fact, you're caressing them now."
Without looking, Elena lifts a ceramic bottle to her ear and jiggles it.
"Oh my,
a fine batch of it,"
Gregory says as he fidges with a spare cork, picking it apart. Elena uncorks the ceramic bottle and sniffs its content.
"That musky smell is a charming characteristic of its unique aging process,"
Gregory says.
"How about we try this again?" she says with a patient smile. "This time, you're going to hand me anything that isn't piss vinegar, and I'm going to taste it and say you're my favorite purveyor of libations."
She jiggles the bottle's watery contents and hands it back. With an embarrassed cough, he reaches into his hastily hidden wares and grasps a glass bottle of deep-shaded wine. Abigail and Hugo curl around each other. He grasps the bottlenecks and says,
"My goddess, I don't suppose you would."
Rising onto the tips of her toes, Elena peers over the stall.
"I would what? be delighted that you found more of that delightful elderberry wine. Gregory sighs, rubs his nose, and deposits two bottles of elderberry wine before Elena, the glass bottles clinking sharply against one another. She uncorks one and breathes in its sweet scent. Yes, that's the one. She takes a long drag of it, and once relinquishing it, points at him. Send a barrel of this up to the chapel. Cyrus will know what to do with it. Gregory winces.
An entire bottle, me goddess.
Yes, and some of these. Elena points to several bottles of bronze-colored ale. However, you're still holding out on me.
What?
He gasps. He glances at the stores of bottles beneath his counter. Aside from an open bottle of clove-spiced ale to warm him as he solicits buyers, the rest of the store contains either duplicates of his display or watered-down poor man's ale.
I swear, by Zeus's beard, I have given you my best.
Flames erupt from the periphery of his stall and crawl up the wooden posts. He leaps back, shouting,
That was it! That was all of it!
Screaming and coughing, Abigail and Hugo shoot out from underneath the burning stall. Elena waves her hand, and the flames launch off Gregory's stall, seemingly yanked by an unseen force, and fly into the air. The fire breaks apart, and, as if someone were pinching dough into various shapes, the flames twist into haphazard silhouettes of crows. The murder of blazing crows flits after the children.
Run, Hugo!
Hugo grasps his sister's hand, and together they dash down the street, but skitter to a stop as the swarm of flames swoop in front of them. Abigail yanks Hugo into a hard left as the flame crows nip at their sleeves and weave around them. Embers wreathe Hugo's arm and burnt threads fall into the mud. The children twist around again, looking for any opening in the avian conflagration.
What is going on?
Rodney, silver-bearded man, pushes aside the crowd, hastening towards the commotion. He gasps as he catches a glimpse of the children's anxious faces through the flames.
Abby! Hugo!
He shouts and bolts towards the flames, but stumbles into a stop upon seeing Elena with her hand raised towards them. He doffs his straw hat and clutches it to his chest.
My goddess, please, whatever they did.
He stops again, trying to compose himself, and genuflects into a fast bow. Elena doesn't break her gaze from the fire dancing around the cowering children.
Did you know that in olden times, you could be quartered by horses for simply looking at a god in the eye?
She says, her voice low, but reverberating in the crowd's ears. Rodney grows pale, and the straw hat spins in his hands as he fidgets. Behind him, a villager mumbles that he had indeed heard that interesting piece of trivia before now. Rodney opens his mouth, shuts it, opens it again, only to be interrupted.
Honestly, I think it was a bit cruel, Elena says, shuddering.
Rodney exhales, and the hat stops spinning for a moment.
I mean, the cleanup alone. People walk down those streets.
Fire, however.
Several in the crowd grimace, foreseeing the terminus of her thought. They uneasily watch as Elena pinches the air, contracting her fiery pets around the children, trapping them.
Is very clean, she finishes.
No!
Rodney gasps and drops to his knees, unable to look away. A couple of middle-aged women behind him lean forward and pat his upper arms and shoulder gently, letting him know it'll be over soon enough.
Stop!
Abigail screams through the tornado of flames.
We're sorry!
Elena pinches the air a little tighter, and the children yelp as the flames lick their elbows.
Here!
Abigail cries, and a melting wedge of cheese breaks through the wall of fire. Several more wedges follow as Hugo empties his pockets. Rodney watches and groans with dismay as the cheeses ooze onto the road.
You sure that's all of it?
Elena asks, directing the crows to peck at Abigail's pockets. After a moment, apples and a few candles plop onto the ground next to the ruined cheese.
Get them off of us!
Abigail yells. Hugo's wordless wailing rises over the rustling fire.
First, why don't you tell the crowd where all that contraband came from?
She says, and the cone of fire spreads open, revealing the children's faces shimmering with sweat. The crowd uncomfortably shifts, keen on remaining spectators and not participants. Elena snaps her fingers.
Come on, those mouths can do more than gobble gouda.
Abigail folds her sweaty arms and purses her lips.
Elena squats next to her. The fiery crows flutter around them, and one lands on Elena's outstretched hand. She brings a smoldering corvid close to Abigail's face and leans in.
What should happen to little girls and boys who steal?
Abigail keeps a close watch on the flames as they inch closer to her cheek. Rodney and the townsfolk grow quiet and lean forward. Even the flickering crow cocks its head, waiting for an answer. Abigail meets Elena's eyes. With as much moisture as she can muster between syllables, she spits,
"Nothing!"
A long grin creeps across Elena's face.
"Nothing."
Abigail stares back at her and shrugs theatrically. Elena stands and releases her crow to circle overhead.
"Well, if I can't punish you,"
Elena sighs, helpless.
"Then we'll just have to take off all your grandfather's fingers and toes, then."
"What?"
Rodney stammers.
"I can't farm if I..."
The crow grumbles and debates whether the goddess has gone too far, or if that line had already been crossed when she forced the previous altar boy to hunt for truffles while stark naked on an icy winter's night after referring to her as that unkempt siren that men regret washing up on shore for. An elderly woman swears she has seen the boy's ghost by the river during the last full moon. Abigail shouts,
"That's not fair!" "Fair is a word you use to describe the weather and young maidens, nothing more."
"But you've already destroyed our fields," Abigail shouts. "And now we can't trade nothing, and we're all going to have nothing to eat this winter. And then we're going to starve to death while trying to eat snow."
"What fields are you talking about?"
Elena scrunches up her face as she attempts to recall each of her past few nights. Mouth hanging half open, Abigail gapes at her.
"You don't even remember, do you?"
Elena scoffs.
"Oh, don't act superior just because you can remember your week.
You were standing in our fields, puking and yelling gibberish,"
Abigail says, throwing up her arms. Gasps emanate from the gathered townfolk.
"And then you belched a big old ball of fire. When the wheat caught fire, you just stood there, watching it until you passed out."
I guess that could explain those stains on my skirt,"
Elena says with immense relief.
"That's awful,"
yelps someone behind Elena, and the goddess, unable to match the voice to the face, gives the entire crowd a narrow, daring look. The crowd stares back with mutinous disgust. Even Rodney glares at her before looking away, sensing a deeper tension than usual. She grits her teeth and says,
"What?"
No one speaks.
"Spit it out, now,"
she growls. A weathered sexagenarian with a quivering chin speaks up.
"It's just that the Duchamps are the only ones who usually grow the wheat, my goddess."
Rodney nods with furious affirmation.
"That's right."
From boot to head, Elena assesses the crowd. All eyes remain steady on her, as if to keep her from simply mentioning the time and strolling off in the opposite direction. Finally, she folds her arms.
"Well, truth be told, most of you look pretty porky."
Finding his confidence among the seething stares of his fellow villagers, Rodney says,
"My goddess, this means no bread, no pie, no beer."
"Yes, I'm aware,"
she snaps. Out of the corner of her eye, she notices Abigail flashing a haughty smirk. After a moment, a tranquil smile spreads over the goddess's lips.
"You know, it's obvious, really, now that I think about it."
She grips Abigail's shoulder and the girl winces.
"You were probably looking for frogs with your lantern, or maybe your brother thought he'd play with some flint he found."
Abigail's cheeks drain to a ghastly white.
"No, you're making stuff up."
"And we all know that accidents can happen even to the best of us,"
Elena says, giving the girl another sharp squeeze.
"And as the fire grew, you thought about the switch that Papa has hanging on the wall. Then with a burst of relief, you remembered, Elena, master of flames, conjurer of wildfires, leveler of forests.
Surely no one would question such a story."
"That's not what happened,"
Abigail protests.
"You see, I wouldn't be so negligent as to destroy our only source of bread with fire. Besides, if I'd really seen your field burning, I would have been able to extinguish it with a wave of my hand,"
she says as she demonstrates by making her flame birds overhead poof out of the air.
But I saw you watch it burn.
Her tone sharpens like a sudden wind.
I'm sorry, but you're insinuating that I watched, helpless in your fields, as I was unable to control my own flames?
Abigail opens her mouth to retort, but catches the fierce stare of her grandfather, who shakes his head at her as if to say, "Don't you dare answer that." She bites the bottom of her lip and pouts.
"Oh, nothing to say for yourself."
Elena turns back to the townsfolk and gestures at Abigail. "She's not even old enough to drink, but she's already stealing tributes and blaming the gods for her misdeeds."
Incredible.
The townsfolk remain quiet. Some frown at Elena and others at Abigail. Rodney massages his forehead, exhales, and says in a flat, defeated tone,
"I suppose she'll need to be punished then."
"Grandpa!"
Abigail gasps, betrayed. With a pained expression, he snaps his fingers and waves Abigail over to his side. As she trudges into his reach, with the expression of a drenched cat, he stoops and says to her in a volume loud enough for the goddess to hear,
"Behave yourself, Abby, and maybe the goddess will show you some clemency."
Elena wrinkles her nose.
"After snuffing out all of this year's pie and beer?" she snorts. "No, no, no. What I have in mind involves her on sore hands and knees, slaving away into the night and swearing the names of ancient gods."
With relish, she says,
"Needless to say, you're working in the brothel, missy."
Several of the mothers in the crowd collectively gasp in horror. Elena looks up, puzzled, then says,
"What? No, not like that."
She sighs.
"You'll be scrubbing the floors, washing the linens, and cooking for the girls. We all know that Miss Penthrope could use a little help these days. I mean, with those cataracts, I'm surprised she hasn't taken on a bear as one of her ladies yet." "Ma says that place is for strumpets,"
Abigail says, nearly in tears.
"Well, your mother is probably a little biased given your pa's late-night adventures."
Rodney clears his throat.
"Thank you, my goddess. This is more than fair. More than fair."
You're welcome, Elena says. "But save your real gratitude for the festival."
Abigail clutches her grandfather's leg and, with a phlegmy sob, buries her face into his coat. He takes Hugo's hand and puts his other arm around Abby, gently pulling her along.
"Hush, dear. You were quite fortunate, really. It could have been much worse."
He continues to try to cheer her up as they journey home. The crowd dissolves into smaller clusters, Elena wandering among them, scanning faces, hunting for a specific one. She spots the pudgy, pimple-scarred face of Timothy as the altar boy weaves carefully through the crowd with two overstuffed bags in his arms. She calls to him.
"Hey, Moonface!"
Timothy peers over his towering cargo. Seeing the goddess, he beelines for her, placing priority on speediness over courteousness. As he tramples over toes, he mutters quick apologies and struggles to prevent the heavy bags from toppling out of his arms. Upon reaching Elena's side, he pants and struggles to catch his breath.
"My goddess,"
he says, gasping.
"I think I got everything."
"What about my dress?"
she says, picking through the bags.
"Ms. Volpe says she needs another week."
Elena raises an eyebrow in disbelief.
"You told her that I'd be repaying her with a warm heart and snow-free roads this winter, yeah?"
he says.
"Give her a few coins tomorrow, but tell her I want the damn thing now."
Timothy nods and Elena rifles through another bag. He looks up at the distant ridges where heavy cinereous clouds obscure the mountain peaks of neighboring mountains.
"Looks like rain."
"Hmm?"
She squints up at the ridge.
"Ah, Hades," she swears.
"Maybe it'll peter out,"
he says with a shrug. Elena grumbles.
"If I have to spend another week holed up in my chapel with that priest of mine listening to raindrops, I swear I'll turn that dusty old marble into ash."
With a concerned glaze, Timothy says,
"Why don't you just stay at the tavern?"
She squeezes his shoulder, and with a smile she says,
"You see, Moonface, this is why I won't let Cyrus replace you."
The altar boy grins. He hikes up his bags and marches alongside the goddess up the road, where Elena's cracking and soot-blackened chapel overlooks Glassalon.